Drupal Voices is a series of interviews with people contributing to the Drupal community. Brought to you by Lullabot Consulting. Whether you need technical architecture, developer support, optimization and analysis, on-site training, or just general guidance for your Drupal project, Lullabot has led many of the largest Drupal projects in the world. Visit lullabot.com or call 877-LULLABOT to find out how we can help you with your next project.
I'm Josh Koenig. I've been in Drupal for many years now. I founded a consultancy, Chapter 3, based in San Francisco, but we've been doing a lot of great work there. And as of this year, I'm working full-time on a new venture called Pantheon, which is a collaboration between some of my partners at Chapter 3 and David Strauss, who was a founder at Four Kitchens in Austin, and working together in our office in San Francisco, building the killer app platform for Drupal. Basically, we want to solve the problems that bedevil developers, that take them away from the tasks they're good at. So things involving system administration, deployment, even just making development easier to do. We want to reduce the friction and empower our developers and basically raise the level of the game across the board in Drupal, and we're building a company and a service that does that.
Cool. So I guess some of those best practices, having a development server, a staging server, and a live server, and all that sort of deployment process, is kind of a lot of overhead for just like an individual Drupal developer to set up on their own. So tell me about like the workflow that you have set up for developers.
Sure. So what we do is we make sure, first and foremost, that everyone's using Git. Now that the Drupal project is standardized on that as a version control system, we like that choice. It's a really good tool. So we'll start people off with a correctly branched Git repository that pulls from the Drupal upstream, and then we use Git as well as our other scripted tools to move people from dev to test to live. And it's not a very complicated process, actually, but it's a laborious process if you're doing everything by hand. And there's just this gap between website developers and people who have traditionally done server administration, and we're going to fill that gap and make it all essentially push button easy for folks to do it the right way from the beginning. And once you start doing it that way, you realize you don't want to go back to doing it the old way. And everything gets easier and more stable and faster. And we're excited to kind of bring that level of rigor and professionalism to the Drupal development process.
And one of the issues that smaller websites have to face is kind of a trade-off between, do I point and click and set up all this configuration and save it to the database, or how do I get that database into the live server, or do I use features? And you know, that all the overhead and knowledge it requires features. So talk a bit about that trade-off and how you sort of addressing those two audiences.
Yeah, I mean, this is a problem that the whole Drupal project is dealing with. And our contribution is to try to figure out where the wins are and make it really easy for people to do that. So for instance, the way that we have our development, testing, and live infrastructure set up now, it lets you use the best practice. So when you go into testing, what you'll do is you'll take the code from your development database and the data from your live site and bring them together. And then you can run update.php and you can see whether or not you've got it all in there, right? Because it requires manual work to make a scripted update process function at this point. We encourage people to do that process because really, if you think about the actual, what you do in reality, pointing and clicking, you know, on the live site is not very safe. And if you want to do it right, you have to have pretty rigorous notes. And if you're doing the work to create the notes, you might as well be writing the update script. And what stops people from doing that is that it's just sort of like not a well-known thing. And it's kind of like the extra effort of creating the update hook and all that other stuff is a blocker, or at least a deterrent. And we think if we can kind of automate some of those functions and show people that it's not very hard to do it this way, more people will start doing it that way. And once you start doing it that way, again, you don't want to go back. Beyond that, I think that there's going to be a lot of things we'll be able to do as the Drupal project matures and kind of standardizes more of these things to automate the creation of update processes. So there's no reason we shouldn't be able to say, oh, I've made adjustments to this view in dev. I would like to export those to code and revert the view. Currently, that means you'd have to go into the view's UI, copy the code out, check it into your version control, and push it. We could make that a one-click process, and then I think we get a lot more people using that process, because if you make it easy to export to code, there's no reason not to, and once you start doing it and you see the value of it, you wouldn't want to go back.
I see. And so you're kind of advocating for doing still things in code, which is writing update scripts as opposed to just wholeheartedly moving everything over to features.
Yeah, I mean, I think what features does is it helps you with a lot of these things, but features doesn't have, it's not possible for features right now to have 100% coverage. So you still need to have update scripts. If everything's exported to code, you actually don't need to run update.php, you just need to flush the caches, right? But that still means running update.php. It's an easy way to flush all the caches that need to be flushed. But there are other things that are not exportable, right? And their features doesn't have 100% coverage. So it's not the answer, it's the beginnings of an answer. And so we want to support that, but we also want to support a best practice process that allows you to cover the other 10 to 20% of things you might need to do in an update that aren't covered by features.
I see, and I noticed just in looking at your booth, you have a lot of like user interface that you kind of developed in this process to kind of help manage this and not just have people live in the command line.
Right.
So talk a bit about what kind of web interface you have to kind of help manage the production and dev and staging servers.
Yeah, so I'm a command line guy myself, and we have some pretty interesting command line tools, but in real terms, the interface that makes sense for developers is a control panel, right? I'm a command line guy, but I don't like hunting around on my box to find the log file that I should be looking at to see the error that just happened. So one of the things we do is we surface a lot of information for debugging purposes into the control panel in a sort of a live log feature that we've developed that pulls information both from Drupal but also from the larger server environment and helps you spot problems quickly. We also have, you know, push button tools to do the deployment processes. You know, doing a deployment right is actually a multi-step thing, and it used to be you had to click. Our new control panel, I think, does a much better job, because rather than making you click a bunch of buttons in the right order and you knowing what that is, it's just like a little wizard and it sort of sets it up and scripts it for you. We're really interested in building more features into the control panel because we think that as people see that it's easy to do things in a sort of a best practice way, it's really easy to adopt those best practices, and then you see the value of them. And then again, it's like, oh, why was I doing it the other way before? So we're excited to like build more stuff into the control panel. Stuff for site owners to do monitoring and, you know, look at things and make sure that things have been online, to do site health. Not just is your site healthy, like is it up, but is it flourishing, right? Do you have users logging in? Are people creating content? Being able to surface some Drupal specific metrics into the control panel, something we're excited to add. We're also excited to add like social coding and team functionality, the ability to help people solve problems, the ability to just manage access across a group of people, you know, have a site owner role versus a developer role, teams that manage different sites. I mean, there's a lot of stuff that happens in the Drupal world that we can just take the friction out of and, you know, move the human up to the top of the stack, let people be creative and innovative and not bogged down in robotic tasks.
I see. And in looking at Chapter 3's website, you, well, I don't know if it's still there in the redesign, but you had kind of like a running counter of how many websites you guys have done. And you guys, as a shop, tend to do like more small to middle range websites, but a whole bunch of them. So did the Pantheon project kind of come out of your experiences of working with these smaller sites?
I mean, certainly informed by that. I mean, Chapter 3's history has been in the middle of the market, I would say. We've done some really big projects, some big enterprise projects, and those have been really exciting and informative to work on. But on a day-to-day basis, we're just, you know, doing what a lot of developers are doing. And see sites that are sort of in the middle band, that's where most of the work is. That's also where a lot of the problems are. Like, the big enterprise customers are driving some of the features around performance and scalability, which we've kind of delivered as well, which is good. And they're driving some of the stuff around configuration management. But these aren't just enterprise tools. Everybody should have this stuff. These are things that every site does need. And honestly, like even down to the sites that are on shared hosting, in a perfect world, everyone would have this technology because it just makes your life easier, it makes your site better, and it makes, you know, whatever you're doing with Drupal that much more effective. And there's no reason that those types of tools should be bottled up in the top 1% of the market. We're going to bring it out for everybody.
I see. And I've also heard that this is a tool that's free for developers, and then it's sort of to get best practices in for a website, and then the website pays the hosting fee. Is that correct?
Or? Yeah, our anticipation, so we don't actually have official pricing at this point. We're still in a beta. That's important to note. We've got about 35 people that we're working with closely. We have some live sites, and we're keeping it small right now because we want to have one-to-one relationships with most of our users and learn. We're still learning an incredible amount because, you know, we've built a couple hundred websites between Chapter 3 and 4 Kitchens, but that's just a small sample of the stuff that's out there. So we've got to learn a lot. But it is free for developers, and it will be free for developers. We're committed to that. Again, this is a tool that we want to make for everyone. And then our anticipation is that the way that most people do business in Drupal, someone swipes a credit card at some point before the site goes live, and very often that'll probably be the owner of the site, which often isn't the developer. If a lot of people are interested in doing reselling, we could look at that, but our best guess based on talking to people is that the site owners should pay for the live site, and that's different from the developer account that was used to create it.
I see. What were some of the other big pain points that you came across that you were really trying to solve with this project?
Well, one of the things is updates. So it's not that hard to update core, but it's labor to update core and when these releases drop. So now that we, again, now that the Drupal project is standardized on Git, which was a great move, we're able to use that as a power tool for scripting and automating a lot of the updates and making, you know, taking that friction out of the process. So no longer do you have to worry about devoting a day or two to updating all the sites that you've run. You can just click the button, or maybe just click the I see that it worked button, and it's already been done for you. That's one. Just all the other infrastructure stuff around setting up and configuring the server side. We have an import process for the platform, so if you've already built some sites or you're already working on a site, it's relatively straightforward to on-ramp that work into the system. If you don't have Git right now, just send us a tarball and we'll make you a Git repository. That's how the process works. So again, those are the common pain points of the stuff that happens around the actual Drupal development itself that trips people up, slows them down, or prevents them from taking advantage of the best features that are out there.
And is that automatically updating contrib modules as well, or not? Because I just sort of have concern of, of contrib modules automatically being updated and then breaking the site.
Sure. So right now, actually, because the Git stuff rolled out relatively recently, we don't update contrib at all. That's still on you. However, we want to, because you should be able to. We're probably not going to be very soon in a position of actually, well, because we have dev tested live, right? We're never going to update someone's live site for them because it could be unpredictable. What we may get to is a point where you could opt into automatic updates on your dev site and you receive a notice that updates have been performed and you should probably check it out. And if they didn't work, here's where you click to revert those updates, because that would save people a lot of time. For Drupal core, I wouldn't have a problem doing that because Drupal core updates have been stable for years and I very, very rarely see that causing a problem or breaking a site. For contrib, it's, you know, it's contrib, so it's hit or miss. But I still think in a lot of cases people would be into, because you know, if there's an update available, they're going to try it. Why not, you know, have it roll out and try it for me? If you're not actively developing a site and you haven't looked at that dev environment in a few weeks, like, just run it for me. It's not going to get in the way of anything. But that would be an opt-in, I think. And certainly we would never be like having robots do work on people's live sites for them, because that's something that the human needs to approve.
I guess one of the other things that comes up with working on the server is setting up additional things like Apache Solr or, you know, performance-related stuff or testing. And so talk a bit about, like, if there's one profile that you're going to have or sort of a flavor of different, you know, is this just a brochureware site or is this kind of a mid-level site? Do they need more stuff? So talk a bit about some of that stuff.
So, I mean, yeah, the background of this project, the Mercury project, was let's figure out the best practice server environment. And that's one of the cores of Pantheon, right? And at this point, in terms of the services that we currently deploy, which is Solr, Memcache, and Varnish, I don't think there is a site that doesn't benefit from having those three technologies in place. Having faster pages, being able to have logged in user experience work faster, and having a better search is for every site. There's not a site that doesn't need all three of those things. In the future, as we look to, like, the stack itself is evolving. Like, as the web evolves, the stack evolves, and there's a lot of cool technologies that we're going to be able to integrate with Drupal 7 that might not be for everyone. And part of what Pantheon as a platform wants to be is, you know, we're going to select the best infrastructure providers, we're going to select the best services, and then we're going to give you guys options and tools to integrate Cassandra or Mongo or other things like this that might not be for everyone. That might only be for sites that are, you know, have a higher volume or are concerned with higher performance or have a specific type of use that can really take advantage of some of these next generation technologies. But in terms of what we do right now, we pre-integrate everyone's site with Solr, Memcache, and Varnish, because we think those are technologies that everyone, every use case, there's the only use cases that don't benefit from those technologies are extremely obscure, and at that point they don't get in the way. So we just do it for everyone by default.
Yeah, and I guess one confusion that people may have is that Pantheon was originally associated with this Amazon image that you would be able to kind of download and use, and then now Pantheon seems to be more of a service. So what happened to the whole kind of experiment of open sourcing all of that Amazon Web Services image and then sort of the direction you're taking now?
The naming convention we're going to go with is Mercury is this freely available image or script for setting up the high-performance hosting environment. Pantheon is a platform that uses that, but it also has the version control, the deployment workflow, the developer control panel, the access control. It's a service, and it also is going to be updated and maintained and supported, right? So if you want to roll your own, Mercury is still out there and is going to continue to receive updates as we figure things out, but it's just going to be for setting up a site and probably we might do an updated version of the Amazon image, but honestly, for people who are concerned with high performance, there are better clouds than Amazon to be using for that, and so I don't want it to be, you know, just tied to that, because there are, people need options. So we're going to make it scriptable in a way that you could set it up on almost any infrastructure, including your own infrastructure. It doesn't need to be just for clouds. Like, if you've got a server, you could run this stuff. Why not?
Cool. And finally, heard that you guys got some funding, and so what can you say about that and the future of what you're going to be working on?
Sure. So, well, we made a decision after, really honestly, last summer that we wanted to do this seriously. It started out as something we were bootstrapping as a side project. You know, it was just like, hey, can we make this server config work? And we can. Let's give it away. And then people really liked that, and they expected there to be support and maintenance and a service around it. And we were like, oh, well, we don't have the ability to do that. I'm just a Drupal developer. I'm just showing you guys some tricks, right? And then, but there was enough interest that it really made us sit up and listen and say, hey, wait, people want this. And then we started to look at the Drupal universe and how it's changing and evolving and growing and maturing, and we realized there was a huge gap. Right, there's a huge gap between what Drupal does for you to make a website and what a company like Rackspace does for you to give you a server. Right, there's just like this massive desert in between those where a lot of projects die or run into real trouble, or people burn weeks or months of their time. And so we thought, this is a real problem. People really want this solution, and it looks like we're onto something. So like, let's maybe think about doing this seriously. And that was when David moved out to San Francisco and started working with us in our office. And we made the decision to go try to seek funding, because we didn't want to have to do it as a side project. We wanted this to be able to be our full-time job and to do it right. We also wanted the advice and expertise of people in the industry that have done this type of stuff before. I mean, Drupal's pushing the envelope in a lot of ways, but building platform as a service businesses is actually something that a lot of people have done. And, you know, having the benefit of that expertise is really good. So we ended up raising about $1.3 million as a seed round to sort of get things going. That's why it can be my full-time job, even though we're not charging people. And we got some really, really great people on board. Some of the folks that helped found and fund Heroku, which is a very successful platform product for Ruby. It sort of proved that you can do this, and you can focus on developers and build something that actually really works. And Ruby is not Drupal. They're not actually really analogous. They're somewhat similar, but it's not. It's a framework, and it's different, right? But the model that they proved of saying, let's build something that takes away the friction for developers, let's build something that helps people integrate next generation services, let's make it really easy and fun to use, turns out that's a winning recipe. So that's what we're going to try to do too for Drupal, although Drupal has a lot more community to engage in it than Ruby does, and we're excited to do our take on that platform idea.
Okay, thanks.
Sure, thank you, Ken.